everyone, and welcome to Anatomy of Tone. I'm Mark Marshall, and this week we're going to talk about some guitar picks I've been checking out from a company called Chicken Picks. Before we get into that, I thought I would just take a second to share a little bit of advice for any of you that are looking to get into recording and reflecting a little bit on my journey and maybe some of the mistakes I feel I made from when I started out, which was just having to figure it out on my own. And I've been talking to my college students about this because there's a lot of details that you can get caught up in and thrown off by in the beginning. One, I think that it took me a while to figure out was, I don't know, managing, figuring out what software to use, what hardware to pair it with. Like, this whole world I was living in for a long time of like, should I use Logic? Should I use Ableton? Should I use Luna? Should I use Pro Tools? All of these things, you know, do I use a Universal Apollo? What do I use? I've tried pretty much every DAW at this point. I'm trying to think if there's any that I haven't used. And I've tried a lot of different audio interfaces. At this point, really, the thing I wish I had done when I was younger is to just use Pro Tools and buy into the HD system. And now that's going to be somewhat controversial because people are going to say, well, I hate Avid, and there's better apps, there's better programs and stuff, and converters than the Pro Tools system. But here's the thing that I'm reflecting on now. I can never fully calculate the amount of time I've wasted trying to figure out how to get specific pieces of hardware and software to work together. I mean, it happened recently in the past couple of years. I bought a Mackie control surface that I was using with Logic, and then I switched to Luna, which then it didn't work as well. And then I moved back to Pro Tools because I'm using Pro Tools when I teach at SUNY Purchase and a recording studio that I'm working out of in Queens now. So it makes sense to have, be using a DAW that is accessible between all those studios. And then the Mackie control surface, the MCU, just isn't really getting along with Pro Tools at all. And it becomes so frustrating with these different levels of hardware and software not working together, particularly with like hardware controllers and such, rather than analog gear, which, although analog gear can be finicky, I find it much easier to just interface with recording studios. It's just very frustrating. And that's just one example. You know, the same has gone true with audio hardware and dealing with latency. Like, latency is really just a pain, and you don't want it. You don't want it if you're going to be using outboard processing, and if you're recording live musicians, they can sense latency. And I just, at this point, I'm using an Apollo now, and I really do think highly of the UA Apollo. I think it sounds fantastic, and their plugins are my favorite. But with that being said, next time I have to do a major upgrade to my studio, I think I'm just going to go with a Pro Tools interface. That way everything is running really consistently and made by the same company. And I get it. I don't necessarily want to buy into this idea of giving money to a company that is essentially owning the audio world. However, there is something to be said for the consistency of the product that they make and the compatibility with other studios when you're working. I don't want to mess around with a bunch of software and controllers and interfaces at this point. I want it to work. I want to be able to get right into making music and recording people. I've spent so much time buying products. This product's going to work. They're going to be beautiful together, and they don't. And I'm spending hours trying to get things set up to only find out that there's some fine print that's like, well, yeah, well, it all kind of works. It doesn't fully work, right? And that's happened to me so many times. It's just really frustrating. And I'm just enjoying working in Pro Tools because just the consistency factor. And when I use the HD interfaces at school, and again, the fact that they just interface so well just makes one part of the job easier. Just knowing that things are going to work most of the time, I mean, as much as computers do, I would say much more consistent than pairings of other third-party hardware and interfaces and DAWs. And they've been doing it a long time, and they've been developing their product and all their hardware to work together, and it just makes sense. And I get it that people are going to say, well, this software has this feature and that. And, yeah, I get it. We all want everything, but I would say, as far as from an engineering perspective, and a mixing perspective, and being able to make sure you get the job done without as many headaches, I would say Pro Tools with an Avid controller and HD system is the way to go. It's just going to be more straightforward. It's expensive, so there's definitely cheaper options, which is the bait in how a lot of companies get you in. But don't take that route. If you can, save the money, do what you can, make the investment. It'll just make your life that much easier down the line. Let's talk about guitar picks. I received some picks from Chicken Picks, and they're very interesting guitar picks. I haven't quite used anything like it before. They have beveled edges on it, which is something that I don't traditionally use a lot with a guitar pick. And they're made from an interesting material. It's thermosetting plastic, which is much harder and denser than most other plastic picks. And they don't chip, so where other picks can eventually chip from using them, they don't chip and they last a really, really long time. And the points of the pick actually will end up sharpening themselves as you use them. They result in a fuller sound with, I don't know, like, it still retain a lot of definition. It almost feels like the frequency range is a little bit more balanced than I would say from some other picks. Often, like, when you're using a pick, you have to play a little harder to get the low end to be accentuated, and I'm guilty of doing that, really gripping almost too hard sometimes with a celluloid pick in order to get some more low end out of the guitar pick. Lately, I've been catching myself and gripping a little too hard, and I've actually been trying to reset my brain to lighten up on the pick when I don't need that additional low end. So it's been interesting experimenting with the Chicken Picks, because I could actually lighten my technique more and still get the low end that it would take more tense grip on the pick to create normally. I will say that playing lighter and playing hard do yield very different sounds, right? So using a Chicken Pick and playing super light isn't necessarily going to yield the same expression as using a thinner pick and hitting the strings harder. So we're not talking about expression, we're simply just talking about frequency response. And as far as frequency response goes, you can get the same frequency response from the Chicken Pick as you could a thinner pick if you played harder, but they don't sound exactly like a traditional pick if you do play harder. We're just talking about the availability to low end, which it takes more tension and velocity to achieve that with a thinner pick and a different material. And these picks are great for guitar pinch harmonics. I'm talking about the Chicken Picks, and they have a textured surface on them. Now, this is not typically something I've been a fan of in the past. I traditionally gravitate towards the traditional Fender heavy and medium style celluloid picks, like the vintage celluloid style. It's just what I've used for a long time. Now, I've pretty much used every pick. I shouldn't say that because I haven't used every pick, but I have a bin of guitar picks that is a variety of different shapes, sizes, materials, and I sometimes use them on sessions if a guitar tone isn't right and I can't track down the reason. Sometimes the guitar pick will drastically change the EQ curve of the guitar, and the solution is in switching the pick, and all of a sudden, like, a frequency that was annoying or was lacking all of a sudden is there and it sounds great. So keeping extra guitar picks around that are different sizes and materials and weights can assist you while you're recording to troubleshoot issues. Now, I don't just randomly try them. I only switch picks when I'm having an issue and I need to track it down. So it's a problem-solving measure. I have my picks that I'm comfortable with playing most of the time. And I was talking about the texture on the picks and how I normally don't like it. I've tried like the green picks from Dunlop that have that texture on them, and that wears off over time. I've tried various picks that have indentations in them, and I just don't like it. Some of them have like a little sharp edge at the very top of the pick, where I guess they were made in like a sheet and then broken off, and that little sharp point at the top just drives me mad. It just really sets off my OCD, and I can't take it being on there. Is it the Delrin picks that are like that? I don't know. My wife uses those picks and really loves them, but if I touch them, they drive me crazy. I will say that the textured surface on the Chicken Picks feels pretty nice and natural. I don't know. Maybe it has to do with the thickness of the pick. And they are heavy picks. They're not thin picks. They're pretty heavy. The one I'm holding right now is a 2.7. So these are not like Fender mediums or Fender thins. So they're not that style of guitar pick. But they're really comfortable to hold, and I'm not losing grip. And they don't, even the material, the plastic that they're using, the thermosetting plastic, has a nice feel to it. It's not super glossy. It almost has like a matte like finish in it, which just feels good in my hands. The material is also good, and the grip is good if you sweat, right? And obviously if you're not losing the pick. But one point to make is that the harder that you hold a guitar pick, it tends to induce sweating, right? So holding with a lighter grip means less sweat, which means the pick won't be as slippery to fall out of your hand. Let's discuss a few other reasons that we might choose different guitar picks aside from tone. I feel like a lot of guitar players look at the tone last as a reason to use a guitar pick, and mostly it's based on not dropping the pick or the speed of using a guitar pick, which I'm not going to say those aren't important, but sometimes we lose focus of how it can change the sound of our guitar in either a positive or negative way. And I think that I consider that a lot. I think maybe because I'm a recording engineer and I spend a lot of time in studios, microphones, I'm really thinking about every point in a chain that can change the sound. But it's not that choosing a pick for speed or for grip is not valid. I'm just saying that we maybe need to consider other options as too when we're choosing a pick, and maybe we could find a pick that allows us to have the availability of playing with the speed that we would like and not lose the grip and have a good sound, which it takes trying a lot of guitar picks to find. Actually, and I think the chicken pick achieves that if you're into heavy picks. Again, I mentioned that these are heavy. Let's see what the other sizes I have here. So one is a 2.2, a 2.7. I got a variety of them in different sizes. This is a 2.0. So you can go to the website, chickenpicks.com, and check out the various sizes and shapes that they have. Some are pointy and some are more rounded, which also changes the sound. I should mention how round the tip of the guitar pick is versus how sharp it is. Again, changes the tonality. So it's worth experimenting and seeing what works well for your style. I did some examples today using a couple of different chicken picks and wanted to compare them to a couple others that I use often to just hear what kind of tonal difference it makes, because it's impossible in a podcast, aside from me explaining it, to get a sense of what a different pick does, right? And before we get into it, I mean, the one thing I could tell you about playing with it is I have been able to reduce the tension I've been holding the pick with, and they're very comfortable. I've just been sitting around playing Charlie Parker heads and just experimenting with different modes and doing my regular practice, and it's been a great addition to just when I'm doing my practice or when I'm particularly playing a lot of hard rock stuff with my band Silvertooth Cactus, which, by the way, if you go on Spotify or iTunes and you look up Silvertooth Cactus, we just released a thematic piece that's three songs combined together called Lullaby, which are intertwined stories that go through three different phases of telling the story. And I did a string arrangement for it, and it's co-written by me and the band members of Silvertooth Cactus. And really excited about it. So if you want to go check that out, please do check that out. But I've been using it for that music as well, which is on the verge of thrash metal and hard rock. It works really well for that. Now, if I'm playing like Richie Havens open tuning style guitar playing, then I'm not going to use such heavy picks for that style because it's not really appropriate. So you have to think about the type of music you're playing when you're choosing what tool to use. I chose specifically for the examples I'm going to play a style of music that would work great for showing off these guitar picks, chicken picks. I really like these a lot, and I've never bonded with super heavy picks before. I've used them when I play bass because it's a sound I like, but there's always been a love-hate relationship there with them. But these, I'm really, as an engineer, enjoying the sound of, and they feel really good. Well, for the first example, I think I'm just going to start with the bass, speaking of which, and the first one I wanted to demonstrate the use of palm muting, not using a foam on the bass, but I was actually palm muting it, kind of like Paul McCartney does. And also I've been observing Seth Undercheck from Silvertooth Cactus, and he's a great bass player and does a lot of rock bass, and he's been palm muting and playing bass with a heavy pick, and I've really been enjoying that sound in the band. The first example though is going to be more of a retro 60s vibe. So I used a Fender P bass with flat wound strings. I split the signal, so one is DI and it goes into an API 312 mic preamp, which is going into a Purple Audio MC77 compressor, and that's going into the Apollo into Pro Tools. And then the split signal is going into an Ampeg V4B. It's a 1972 bass head, which is going into the Universal Audio Apollo. And then I'm recording that in just to blend the two together, because I do like the sound of an amp still with bass. It gives me the tone, and then the DI signal gives me the attack and the depth of the signal. I'm just going to play these four versions I did straight in order so you can hear the variety in tone. The first one is the chicken pick. The second one, I used a Fender Heavy celluloid pick. The third one is like one of those green tortoiseshell medium, or I guess they're it's a kind of a heavy pick. What are they, like in the 70s or 80s? And then the last one is a rounded edge, like mandolin pick I have, just so you can hear what it sounds like with a rounded heavy pick. I really like this pick, actually, for a bunch of different instruments for a softer tone. To my ears, the first example using the chicken pick was more rounded overall. The low end, I felt like I was getting more of that sub content, and the high end was a little punchier and clearer. It just started to sound like it already had EQ on it that I would often have to pull up an EQ and adjust the bass for. So I really liked that about it. It was thick and yet present and articulate. As I'm doing these examples, I thought I would just discuss some of the compositional techniques I used for those of you out there that are into writing your own music and composing. This particular example, I was using modulations to move to different key centers to create a little variety. I had one riff and I wanted to extend it. I wanted to, instead of just playing the same A riff over and over again, to feel like the scenes are changing a little bit. It's just a way to extend a piece of music. In classical music, we call it prolong, and to just stretch it out. So I stretched it out by moving it to different keys, but the keys weren't random. I figured out which keys I wanted to move to, and then I thought about the ways that I can smooth out the modulations, and I used a couple of different techniques for modulation within this example. So it started in A, and it's more of like a mixolydian kind of vibe, and there's no third in it, so it's a bit hard to say, is it minor, is it major? But it basically consists of the 1, the 5, the 7, the 1. And I was moving that riff to different tonal centers. I wanted to go from A to C sharp, which is a third away, a mediant away. The way I did that was to use a 5 chord of C sharp to get into it. So the 5 chord sets up the new key signature. So I'm playing an A. I play a G sharp, and then I go to C sharp. So it's a little like, it's coming, let you know it's there. And now to get back to the key of A major, so I went A, I went to C sharp, and now I went back to A again. I used a 2-5-1 in the key of A major to move back to it, right? But I was a little fancy with the 5 chord. So if I'm moving back to A, I used a B minor. And then what I did is for the normal 5 chord, which would be an E7 in A, I used a tritone substitution, which is using a chord tritone away, which makes it a B flat. So I went B, B flat, A. So 2, flat 5 substitution, and then back to the 1 chord. So a different way to move back to our home key of A. Now the next time I wanted to move to the key of F sharp, I did this by creating a sequence. The sequence is a pattern that you just follow one down or up one by one. They belong together. It feels like it's the same riff, maybe moving up or down a ladder. So I took a 2-beat phrase, 1-2 in, and then I just sequenced that each time moving down by a half step. And so I started on A and I moved down a half step each time with the same lick until I got to the key I wanted to go to, which was F sharp, which is also a chromatic median away from the key of A. Right? So I went medians third in either direction, which is very common in film composition. Again, this is just a way to stretch out the material and make it something that is old feel new again. Now that we're in the key of F sharp, we need to find a way to get back to that key of A. The way I did this was to use a 5 chord substitution to get back to the A. So I played G sharp diminished, which is sometimes a substitute for E7, to move us back to A. So it's essentially like a E7 chord moving back to A. But between that F and G sharp, because now I'm treating the G sharp as the root note, I used a G passing tone. So I went F sharp, G, the passing tone. Then I played a G sharp diminished arpeggio. And then I moved back to the key of A. 3 different ways that we can maneuver through modulations. I can unpack this further if anybody is interested. Just reach out to me and I give composition lessons. I just want to plant some seeds for people because I feel like when I was younger and composing, I would come up with an idea and it would feel like an island in the middle of the ocean. I just didn't really know what to connect it with. And I felt like it was like a random lottery that another idea would come and I'd piece it together. And it made it sometimes hard to complete songs or compositions because it just didn't feel like I could find anything that could fit. And understanding some of these principles of composition can really help you finish your material. It doesn't change the way you have the ideas. It just changes the way that you finish your material and are able to prolong or expand upon it, which I find incredibly useful. I wanted to use the chicken pick in a context of more of a punk bass setting. So we used a Fender Bass 6 with round wounds on it. I used the chicken pick and I used the same split signal, DI, API, Purple Audio, and that split signal to the V4B, the Ampeg. But this time I turned up the gain a lot on the V4B to get saturation out of the tube amp. It's a great tube head, so it will break up and get crunchy in a very flattering way. Let's listen. Again, I'm going to play all 4 examples in a row. Chicken pick, Fender heavy celluloid, then the tortoiseshell, and then the thick Mando pick with the rounded off edges. Thank you. I have similar feelings about that one as well. Again, no pick is going to be perfect for everything, and depending on the mix and the song you're working on, it can change your opinions. Right now, I'm just listening to a bass track on its own and assessing it. I'm not assessing it in a mix, which it could be a completely different thing if we're doing a live recording, trying to find the right sounds for everybody as we're recording. But I like the feel of the Chicken Pick again for playing this style of music. I was playing pretty hard and broadly with this, in other words, like scratching other strings while I was aiming for the target string. One of the concepts behind composing this, it's in the key of C, and I decided I was going to modulate. Okay, I'm talking about modulation and moving to the relative minor. So the first two cycles through were basing the riff on C major, and then I moved to a B part, which is an A minor, and then I go back to the C major part. So I was also thinking about form with this. I went A-A-B-A was the form concept with it. So form is another way that can really help you get your ideas together instead of just feeling like, I don't know where it's going to go next. Like having maybe an idea of a temporary frame to just stick it to see how it's working, and AABA or ABBA or ABAA. There's a variety of ways that you could think about forms, even within a riff, to experiment with, but I recommend that you experiment with them to just hear how it can help you take one idea and turn it into something that sounds like a verse already. And I just did that by having my main riff in C, and I took the same rhythms, in fact, and moved it to A minor, and it isn't all the same interval movement, but it's the same rhythms. So it feels like the same gesture in some ways, even though the intervalic movement may be slightly varied. For this last example, I used a Warwick FNC 5-string active bass so we can hear what the Chicken Picks would sound like compared to other picks with more of a modern bass, and modern bass with active pickups has more defined low end, and the mid range, I would say, also is considerably different than on the P bass that I have with the flats on it. Almost the upper mid range content is more tweakable, and of course there's a lot more EQ options on an active bass than there is on a P bass with one knob on it, but just a different animal. So I thought it would be worth investigating. Let's listen to it. Thank you. for that one, I just took a riff and I inverted it. So had the first part, right, and I had that riff. And for the second part, I wanted to keep it in a similar world, but I know I needed a change. So I used step modulation. I just took it up a half step. I didn't prepare the key change or anything. I just took it up a half step. But this time, I inverted the pitches. So in the first example, that it's a whole step. So when the B riff comes in, I started and went down a whole step. So I took like my starting point, I thought my starting note, and I just reversed the order of them. If it goes up an interval, then when I invert it, it's going to go down an interval. I changed a few of the phrasing notes slightly, and you're free to do that. I mean, there's no rules in composition, so it's not exactly 100% like true inversion of what I had played in the riff A, but the idea is that I took something I already had, I took it up a half step, and then I just went the opposite direction and tried to keep the same interval movement. Let's move into electric guitars. For this first example, I'm going to use a Stratocaster that has FSC 60s pickups in it. That's going to run into a Headstrong Lil' King reverb with a 12-inch speaker. I mic'd the cabinet. I've gone back to micing guitar cabinets almost all the time. I use the aux for really loud heads like Marshall heads and for like the Ampeg V4B, which is 100-watt tube heads. It's a lot of volume, so I use the aux for those. But for everything else, I'm using microphones. So I used a Toll G12 microphone and centered the cab, and right next to it was an AEA R84 microphone, a ribbon microphone. So the Toll paired with the AEA, I just find with guitar cabinets, having more than one mic on it just helps tell more of the story. One microphone, even if it's a lovely microphone, just feels a little narrow to me sometimes in the amount of detail that it will pick up. And these two microphones are kind of like a golden combination, the ribbon and the Toll G12, which if you haven't heard the podcast on that or read the article on my blog, Anatomy of Guitar Tone, go check it out because it's like such a magical invention for miking electric guitar amp speakers. It's just the best dynamic microphone for electric guitar. So I have those two mics and I'm running into the API and the Purple Audio again, and I just have them blended. For this particular riff, it's like a surf style riff with using the reverb that's built into the Headstrong Lil' King, and I'm also using the Delta Trem from Effect Road because I like the tremolo is a little more softer around the edges on it than the one that's on the Headstrong. It's like it just felt a little more, I don't know, dusty and less hard the way that the LFO was cutting off, or the shape, I should say, right? So let's listen and then I'll talk about what I was thinking. Again, I'm going in the same order as far as Chicken Pick, Fender Heavy, the Tortoise Green, and then the thick rounded pick. Thank you. I panned the AEA ribbon all the way left and the Toll G12 all the way right, and I don't have them at equal volumes. I set the sound in mono, and normally I probably would have just treated this as a summed sound, two microphones to get one mono sound. I thought that listeners might want to just be able to hear which one amp sounded like in one ear and the other, but I didn't want to disrupt that sound that I got with the balance of those two mics, which is often what I'm doing when I put two mics on a cab. It's like a form of EQ. The ribbon fills in some low end, and then the dynamic has a lot of attack. The G12 still has a healthy amount of low end though, so it's a really nice combination. And I just close my eyes and play with the balance until I find what sounds great with them. But they're not often at equal volumes. It could lean in either direction, or sometimes can be equal. As far as the composition, that I wrote a melody line that was outlining a chord progression. We're moving from E minor to A minor to B7, which is the dominant chord, back to E minor, and then we go E minor again and move to a G chord, move to A minor, G, and then E minor again. So the idea was for you to be able to hear the chords being implied without playing through it, right? And this is a great way to think about writing great guitar solos. Now, this doesn't apply to every genre, because sometimes there are certain Chuck Berry and rock and roll solos that you play that you don't hear the chord progression outlined so clearly in it, and you're not supposed to. That's not the intent of it, and that's not the vibe of the music. But for surf music sometimes, and a lot of other forms of music, and jazz, a lot of times when you're soloing or playing ahead or playing a melody, you want to be outlining the chord progression. This is something beautifully you'll find in like Bach's music, and Mozart, they were really masters of outlining melody and ornamenting it, but still there was a framework there for a melody. So I really tried to think about that in this example of outlining this melody on the low strings and just with lots of vibe from the tremolo and the reverb, and not necessarily needing a lot of an accompaniment to tell the story. For this next example, I decided to play something that's more in the classic rock vein. I'm sticking with the Headstrong Little King, but this time I tied in the Earth Drive from Sarno FX, which is, I love this drive pedal, and also with the Solo Dallas Replica Storm pedal, which is a replication of one of the earliest, actually it might be the earliest guitar wireless unit, which is just fantastic. It's the Back in Black sound. Many other people have used it. I did a podcast about this, which you can check out, because it's worth hearing the stories behind this design and the developer, the inventor, I should say. What I really like about this is it adds this beautiful, subtle coloration and compression. And in such a unique way. Actually, it's a limiter, not a compressor. And it does it in a way that you can never get a compressor to do. A lot of times I feel pedal compressors, they're a little too heavy-handed with the compression. You just need something to add a little bit of limiting there, but you don't want it to overtake your signal and make it small. And the Storm Replica really does that. So I often like to pair this with other drive pedals. And depending on what era of music I'm playing with, it's a preamp pedal that'll often stay on in front of my amplifier. Let's listen. I'm going to play a Les Paul standard straight into the Earth Drive, the Storm pedal, Lil King. Same microphone setup, preamps, compressors, everything. Thank you. One thing to note is that I left the noise in there. I think it's important, for example, sometimes to realize how much just inherent noise there is in gear. I use Isotope plugins to get rid of noise when I'm making records, just to keep it quiet and get rid of amp hum. It's become more of a problem in today's world with so many digital, wireless, and Wi-Fi devices around us. It pollutes the air, depending on the power of your house, too, could be issues. And I have a bit of noise here in Brooklyn, not as bad as some of my friends, but it's enough that it's annoying. And I do use the Isotope plugins, which I think are amazing. I actually think if you set them right, you really can't hear the difference, which has come a long way from, I feel like, where noise reduction plugins used to be. So I will use that, but in this case, I wanted to hear the natural amount of hum that was happening. And I used the same order of pick examples in that one. The chicken pick, then the Fender Heavy, then the Greenie, then the rounded Mando pick, just so we can have a frame of reference. For that composition, I really like this idea of having a pedal tone. So I play some slidey chords, power chords, and I have this low open E string that I go back to. It's a bit of a signature of early metal to do that, and of course, early hard rock. I've listened to so much of that music, it's in my DNA. It just felt right to play that for that riff. And I was really thinking it's an E riff, and then sometimes I was treating it in some ways like a minor pentatonic, so I was grabbing that G note. I had this idea that I wanted to go to this part that had a chromatic descending line to it. So I treated the G at one point like a G chord, and then I treated the third of the G chord as a moment to walk down to A, and then to G, and then to F sharp, and then get us back down to E. So it was kind of a fancy way to just do like a walk down from B back down to our E riff. So it's just a way to ornament it. And that's one thing that is cool, if you can learn some of these techniques to take something simple and learn how to elaborate it. So knowing there's a framework there, me just saying like, look, I'm just moving from a B note down to get to our key center, our E again. And I just used a few fancy movements to get there that adds a little more of an interesting ride. In the middle of the riff, I slide between two chords again, two power chords. But one thing I did is in the first half, I do an E, and then I do a power chord to D and into a power chord E. So we hear that flat seven root kind of movement happen. But halfway through that verse, I then switch and I do the slide power chord from C to D. So I took the sliding part, the D to E, and I just took it down a whole step and went C to D. Didn't really think too much about it. That C is the flat six of E, but I didn't really think of it that way. I just kind of was thinking whole steps, right? And playing an E open strings, and I did a D to E whole step thing. What happened if I take that whole that movement, that whole step movement, and I just take it down a step and see what happens? What happens if you take it up a half step or where? You could experiment with moving around to different places, but moving it down a whole step still felt somewhat tethered to the key of E and tonal, so I kept it there, and that's it. And people might be wondering, well, I'm talking about a lot of theory. How much of this am I thinking as I'm writing? And not much as I'm writing. I came up with that first riff. Right, I came up with that riff. And then it was just a matter of, okay, I need to go somewhere with it. You know, sometimes you just hear it and you just play what you hear and it rolls out. But there are other times where you're just like, I need spark, right? I need a spark to set the fire off. And by having some of these techniques, it allows you to get a spark going, and then you hear it and you can make variations to it, right? Like, oh, that's good, but now I'm going to do this, right? It keeps the flames going. It's like kindling a fire. That's how I think about the usage of theory a lot of times when it comes into composition, right? They all started in the same place, but then they evolved, and if they got stuck, I had the tools to get them out. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Anatomy of Tone. I'll be back in 2 weeks for a new podcast, which I'll be talking about a new piece of software that helps align your speakers to deal with poor room acoustics, which has been a game changer for me. Sonarworks Sound ID software. I'll be discussing that. And until then, I hope everybody has a great week. If you're interested in guitar lessons, composition, engineering lessons, feel free to reach out to me at anatomyofguitartone.com. If you have any suggestions for episodes or questions, feel free to reach out. I like talking to people about music. It's something I'm really into, so you're never bothering me. And until then, I hope everybody has a great 2 weeks.